Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, we often talk about the importance of saving for retirement, but new research shows that even those who have spent decades saving freeze up when it comes time to actually spend that money. So what are we saving for? Also this morning, looking for a good page turner to add to your summer reading list? We'll check out the titles on Amazon's list of the best books of 2026 so far. And in our community and business spotlight this morning, how the United Way of Hancock County is helping food and nutrition program benefits stretch even further during the critical summer months. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, June 17th, 2026. The big news yesterday, the new season of shows announced for the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. What a season this is going to be. My goodness, you hear about the five shows this year's season, beginning in late October with Straight No Chaser. Now, that's the one that we knew. They had previously announced that Straight No Chaser was coming back. And once again, this year, kicking off their holiday tour. Right around Halloween, but it's going to be a fun show. It was a terrific show last year, so expect that one to be a big seller. That'll be followed by Stomp, which, if memory serves, Stomp was here a few years ago. So a return performance for Stomp as well, and then A Christmas Story, the musical, in early December. How fun will that be? Legally Blonde, the musical, and Waitress, the musical, which to me, that one is the most intriguing one. That is based on the film from back in the early 2000s. I think it originally came out. Really fantastic film. My wife and I saw that when it came out and just really loved the film. And so she heard that Waitress the musical was coming. That is definitely one that she circled on the calendar. That is coming in June of next year. So those tickets will be going on sale. They're on sale now for members, season tickets on sale now for members, MCPA, and season tickets for the general public. Individual event sales will go on, will go up a little bit later on here in a couple of weeks, but get your tickets because those are all going to sell. Well, that is a terrific season. It's a fabulous season. Three big musicals of the five shows, the upcoming. So, and Waitress, the musical, all of music by Sarah Bareilles, which has been widely praised because it is just fabulous music there. So that is a terrific season. So kudos to Heather Clough and the crew at the Marathon Center for putting together what should be just a fabulous season of performances right here in Flag City, USA. This is kind of interesting. Among the first things that you need to know this morning, one of the ongoing economic stories this spring and summer has been the lackluster real estate market during what is normally a very busy time of the year. I saw this and it was... Now I don't remember where I saw it, and so I can't cite the source, but it was interesting and probably not surprising that half of American homeowners in a new survey say that economic conditions are forcing them to remain in their current homes for an average of 12 years longer than they had originally planned, which I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, we've long passed the era where families will buy a home and live in it for their entire lifetime, right? I mean, that's what my parents, my grandparents did. They bought a home and that's where they made their home for their entire lives. You know, they lived there for like 50 years. And we don't do that anymore, but maybe this is something that's coming back simply because of the economics. Most American, half of American homeowners say they are remaining in their current homes for an average of 12 years longer than originally planned. And one in seven homeowners expect to stay put for at least 20 more years in their current home, which I thought was kind of interesting. But staying put also comes with its own costs, despite claiming to prioritize proactive maintenance on their current home. The average homeowner estimates it would cost over $10,000 and take 2 years to complete all the necessary repairs and maintenance of their current home. So there is that. I don't know. It kind of get hit one way or the other. But I just thought that was kind of interesting, again, given one of the big narratives this year economically with respect to the housing market. A couple of other items here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day on this midweek Wednesday. New scientific research that turns everything we thought we knew about staying healthy on its head. A new analysis showing calcium and vitamin D are actually not that effective for helping with bone strength. And isn't that the thing that we've heard our entire lives? Lots of calcium, lots of vitamin D, strong bones, maybe not. This research out of Canada, they examined nearly 70 studies into the effects of calcium and vitamin D, and they compared them to placebos or no treatment when it comes to increasing the intake of calcium and vitamin D versus the risk of falls and bone fractures. And what they found was little to no difference between those who were on the supplements, calcium and vitamin D, and those who were on a placebo, so they were getting nothing special. And they found no difference. The analysis published in the BMJ group and involved 154,000 people, so not a small sample here. Very interesting. And not only that, separate research that is just out this week shows a completely sugar-free diet may cause unintended health consequences. That's the other thing we've heard. Limit your sugar intake. Go sugar-free. Sugar is bad for you. But a study done involving an experiment with mice shows that eliminating sugar can disrupt your gut health and promote inflammation and metabolic dysfunction, which I don't know what all of that means, but it doesn't sound good. Metabolic dysfunction doesn't sound like something that you want. I'm no doctor, but it doesn't sound good. The research from the Dasman Diabetes Institute in Kuwait recently presented at the Endocrine Society's annual meeting in Chicago, and the lead author says the study highlights the importance of maintaining balanced dietary carbohydrates to support gut and immune system health. So that's the bottom line. Sugar-free is not the way to go either. So, but it goes back to the old saying, what have we heard and kind of anecdotally all our lives? Everything in moderation. Isn't that the old saying? And more evidence that that is, in fact, true. But I just thought that was amazing. Those two things popped up on my newsfeed yesterday, both kind of shattering what we have long been told about maintaining health. Vitamin D, calcium, less sugar or no sugar. All of that apparently is not all it's cracked up to be, as it turns out. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You know, the World Cup is underway. 2026 FIFA World Cup being hosted by the United States in conjunction with Canada and Mexico, but most of the games are in the U.S. And the potential economic boom from tourism in the host cities in this country remains to be seen. That's one of the big draws of the World Cup for host nations, is the influx in tourism and the economic boom that follows. However, according to Expedia, while some host cities should see a real upside, others may not match the early hype. The payoff may not match the early hype. Expedia's data shows that fans booked earlier are traveling farther and spending more to be part of the tournament, just not evenly in every city. And by the way, one of the reasons why they're spending more is because the prices are higher. FIFA jacked up the prices for tickets. I mean, it's just astronomical what people are spending to attend these World Cup games. But, hey, true fans, I mean, I don't get it myself. I'm not sure. I mean, it would be cool if the World Cup were, you know, to be held, you know, halfway around the world and you were able to go see Team USA play. But the number of people who are just spending astronomical amounts of money is just amazing. But anyway, it's not even it's not all the same across every host city. The host cities seeing the greatest influx of business may actually come later, they say, for matches. You know, in the later rounds, as the stakes get higher, the top teams advance and they generate higher fan interest. Expedia says host cities have been more consistent with regular summer demand during the dates of the early rounds. In other words, this year with the World Cup, the tourism numbers are about the same for most of the host cities as they were last year without the World Cup. So there has not been a huge bump. Now, that being said, you could certainly make the argument that, and this has been one of the narratives on the travel and tourism industry, that tourism to American cities has been down for a variety of reasons this year. So maybe if the numbers are similar to last year, it's because we have had a bump because of the World Cup. Otherwise, they would be down. I don't know. But anyway, now, all of that from Expedia being said, Airbnb says they have seen a big influx in searches across host cities thus far, up 80% compared to the year prior, with the biggest increases in actual bookings happening in Philadelphia and Miami. So those are the big steps. By the way, FIFA projected going in a $3.3 billion bump in total economic impact and more than 1.2 million visitors to the New York, New Jersey region alone. So will that materialize? We'll have to wait and see. But kind of interesting data in the early returns on the World Cup economic impact for the U.S. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today, increasing clouds and a high in the 70s. Showers and storms tonight, heavy rainfall possible, a low in the 60s. The Finley Post of the Ohio State Highway Patrol is investigating a two-vehicle fatal crash that happened in southwest Hancock County. The Highway Patrol says a 57-year-old man from Ada was northbound on County Road 15 when he ran a stop sign and crashed into the driver's side door of a vehicle that was westbound on Lincoln Highway. Both vehicles went off the side of the road and came to rest in a field. The Highway Patrol said the driver of the vehicle that was struck, a 30-year-old man from Genera, sustained fatal injuries in the crash, while the driver of the other vehicle was taken to a hospital with serious injuries. The Highway Patrol said both drivers were wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash, and impairment is not a factor in the crash, and it remains under investigation. The Ohio School Bus Safety Act is now on the governor's desk, awaiting his signature.
The bill will increase penalties for drivers who pass a stopped school bus. That includes increasing fines and suspending licenses of repeat offenders. It also allows for cameras on the outside of school buses to help catch drivers in the act. Lawmakers say they've been working to find solutions since an 11-year-old boy was killed and 23 others were injured in a school bus crash in Clark County in 2023.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more on the Ohio School Bus Safety Act in this story on our website. Everyone's invited to participate in the upcoming 4th of July parade in Finley celebrating America 250. Visit Finley says America 250 only comes around once, so be a part of the celebration by joining Finley's annual 4th of July parade and helping fill downtown with red, white, and blue and hometown pride. Participation in the parade is free, and businesses, community groups, decorated bike riders, veterans, first responders, and more are all welcome. The registration deadline is July 1st. Get more details about Finley's 4th of July parade in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, you know, we often talk about the importance of saving for retirement. This morning, I want to talk about putting that retirement nest egg to work, because new research shows that even individuals that have spent decades saving, just like we're supposed to, turn around and freeze up when it comes to actually spending that money. Here to help us understand why and what to do about it are Terry Fiedler, President of Retirement Services at Corebridge Financial, and personal finance expert and best-selling author Gene Chatsky. Terry, let me start with you. What is this new research that we mentioned? What does it tell you about how Americans feel when it comes to spending their retirement savings?
So our research revealed that there is a disconnect between how people envision their retirement and how they actually feel about spending money when they get there. More than 6 in 10 people associate retirement with freedom and enjoyment, yet only about a quarter are comfortable watching their savings decline to fund that lifestyle. Hmm. And people spend decades preparing to save for retirement throughout their working careers, and that could be 30, 40 years more, right, even sometimes. But they've never prepared themselves psychologically to spend when they got to retirement. And so retirement shouldn't feel like moving from a paycheck to a question mark, but it often does.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe it's because we have trained ourselves over the course of many decades to not spend, to save, to continue to sock away money and so on. And Gene, I guess that's the next question. What is driving that anxiety about retirement spending? And you say it actually can influence people's lifestyle choices during retirement.
100%. I mean, what's driving it are a whole lot of different uncertainties, unknowable factors. We don't know how long we're going to live, so we don't know how long the money has to last. We don't know what our health care costs are going to be later in life. Sure. We don't know what the markets are going to do, or interest rates, or inflation. And people are taking all of those factors, it's basically tying them up into knots, and they're not spending as much as they probably could. About 40% of people who are already in retirement tell us that they've spent less than they wanted to, simply to preserve the balance in their retirement accounts. But when they have a plan for spending throughout the years, a decumulation plan, that seems to free things up. That seems to make people more confident that they can manage their spending through retirement.
I like that term. And I suppose to a certain extent, some of that caution is prudent. But Terry, how does having a decumulation, they would talk about accumulating wealth through your career, talk about how this decumulation plan changes the retirement paradigm?
And you're right. The accumulation plan is your savings plan, and your decumulation plan is your spending plan.
Yeah.
And so thinking about it from a personal perspective, that there's not everyone's retirement is different, and they have individual goals can vary dramatically from person to person. And retirement is really, it's really complex, and there's not a one size fits all approach. So, for example, people have different life expectancies, and they have different healthcare costs. And even when you retire, one of us could retire into a market that's going down, and another one could retire into favorable market conditions where the market is going up. So there's a lot of variables that go into that. So what's important is to have a personalized spending strategy that reflects your own circumstances and your own priorities.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because some people may have heard of the 4% rule as kind of a general rule of thumb in retirement. So what you're saying is that may or may not be applicable to every situation.
That's right. It's a starting point.
Okay.
But I wouldn't call it an ending point.
Yeah. So, Gene, what steps can people take right now to give themselves the kind of confidence that leads to the flexibility to spend what they can. Again, making sure that we're not overspending, but spending what we can when we get to retirement.
The very first thing to do is to get a grip on what your retirement is likely to look like. When are you going to retire? Where are you going to retire? Is your mortgage going to be paid off by the time that you retire? Are you going to continue to earn some money in retirement, or are your earnings days over? Take all of that information and have a sit down with a financial professional so that you can look at all the potential sources of income that you have, Social Security that you should try to maximize, as well as any pensions, whether or not you want to convert any of your retirement balance into additional guaranteed income. And that is how you start putting the pieces together in a way that will make you more comfortable.
And again, the overriding message is now is the time to start thinking about this. We spend so much time, like we said, accumulating wealth. It makes sense to spend some time to plan for how we're going to decumulate that wealth that we have amassed over the course of our working life. Where can folks get more information, more resources on this, Terry?
They can go to corbridgefinancial.com/decumulation.
Get people thinking in a different way about their money this morning. Terry Fiedler, again, president of retirement services at Corbridge Financial, and personal finance expert, best-selling author Gene Chatsky. Thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Once again, putting the United Way of Hancock County in the spotlight this morning, and CEO Kelly McClurkin with us this morning. We talk a lot about the Halt Hunger Initiative, especially as we get into the summer months. This becomes even more important. The good news is you have a few opportunities to help folks out with respect to getting healthy food. First and foremost, starting with the farmer's market.
Yes, and I'll back up just a minute, Chris, because you touched a point that I really want to speak on. We're coming into the season where it's even more important. Kids aren't in school, and so vulnerable families need to use benefits, you know, that help supplement their, you know, their food in their home, because 2 out of 5 kids in Hancock County don't have enough food, and they rely on school for that. So you were dead on with that. But yes, Hancock County Farmers Market. Sorry, I'll cut to the chase. There's a big collaboration with a bunch of us that have brought the SNAP program to the farmers market. And that's what people used to call food stamps. It's called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Mm-hmm. And between the Hancock County Farmers Market, us at United Way, Habitat for Humanity's Financial Opportunity Center, and the OSU Extension, we've all been able to help bring SNAP benefits to the farmers markets.
They're used at the farmers market just like they would be used at the grocery store or anywhere else. But again, to support, yes, you know, not only health access to fresh, healthy food, but helping out local producers at the same time. This is definitely a win-win.
Yeah. So you exchange your SNAP benefits for tokens to use, just to be specific about it. And then you can use the SNAP benefits for fresh produce like fruits and vegetables, even honey, or hot sauces, baked goods, or even food plants. So if you want to buy a tomato plant or herbs and start your own garden at home, whether you're an individual or a family, it's a great way to teach healthy habits to kids.
And to help those benefits go even further, you, along with Blanchard Valley Health System, putting together the Power of Produce program.
Yeah, so BVHS has their Power of Produce, or POP program, and that's for children ages 4 to 15. And each week they can get $4 worth of tokens to spend on fresh produce. And again, building those healthy habits. We even have a mom who makes it, their whole family makes it a destination, the farmer's market a destination. Mm-hmm. And they plan their whole, you know, all their meals off of what they're purchasing at the farmer's market that week. And she involves her kids. They use their Power Produce tokens. It's really, like you said, not just building healthy habits, but connecting people and children to agriculture and where their food comes from.
We've talked about this before, what a great way of building those healthy habits for a lifetime. as we know, whether we're talking about food or money or, you know, anything else, the earlier we start kids down that healthy path, the better off they're going to be.
That's right. And like I mentioned, it's a great collaboration. I didn't mention it's in the parking lot of Marathon Center for Performing Arts. So we're lucky to have that like right in the middle of our downtown here. And it's on Thursdays from 4 to 6. It has already started, and we're at that season where there's just going to be more and more vendors each week as we get to more of a harvesting season with the different types of produce. 4 to 6, all the way through the end of October.
And for those who have SNAP benefits, to take advantage of those at the farmers market, how do they do that?
So there are tents set up that you can trade in your SNAP benefits for like dollar for tokens. And that's where we come in. We help. We're the back end of that SNAP benefits, like the kind of fiscal agent of that, to help reimburse the vendors there from their SNAP benefits and things like that. So.
Okay, so making it as easy as possible to use that that benefit, and again, the Power of Produce program and everything else. Like we said, this is just one of many aspects of the Halt Hunger Initiative and working to address hunger issues within the community that, as you were mentioning a little bit earlier, are a lot more pervasive than I think what many people understand.
Completely agree with you, Chris. Each year there's around $2,000 that are spent in SNAP benefits, and this number is going to blow you away. The Power of Produce program is usually around $6,000.
Wow.
Pretty impressive, and more people are living paycheck to paycheck, and it really helps stretch those dollars. We have amazing partner agencies that are tackling hunger issues all the time, and this is just that nice, you know, kind of not extra thing, but gives SNAP benefit another option, a fresh option in the summer, a unique option for the summer.
Doing a lot of good within the community. Again, the United Way of Hancock County in the spotlight this morning, and CEO Kelly McClurkin. For folks who want to learn more, you've got information on your website, of course.
Yes, uwhancock.org. And also, if you're a Facebook person, Hancock County Farmers Market, there's a lot of information, just, you know, how to get there and what to do on their Facebook page. But you can always reach out to United Way, uwhancock.org, or give us a call, 419-423-1432.
Kelly McClurkin, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate you.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We got a really good collection of broken news this morning, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about how the real estate industry has been kind of in the doldrums this spring and summer, and this will probably not help. In Central Arkansas, a real estate agent by the name of Christopher White, works for the local Century 21 agency, discovered a property overrun by serpents during a scheduled home showing. And a showing scheduled, he shows up to open the place up for a potential buyer and discovers the hold. He initially conducted his routine inspection, but noticed the issue after returning to his vehicle to review the property details. He filmed numerous snakes near the entrance, hanging from the eaves of the roof and occupying an old electrical panel. The place was overrun by snakes. Mr. White immediately informed the potential buyers that he would not proceed with the home tour. Probably a good decision. The reptiles were later identified as black rat snakes, which is a non-venomous species. Pretty much harmless. Farmers actually appreciate the black rat snakes for controlling rodent populations like mice and rats. So I guess you could say that the home had no mice or rats, but it did have lots of snakes. So that's, the farmers appreciate them. The real estate agent and presumably the potential buyers did not. So. Speaking of fun with property ownership, this is, you know, one of the things that homeowners sometimes have to deal with. Maybe not to this extreme. You know, neighbors that you think are bringing down the overall property values in a neighborhood or diminishing the quality of life for the neighbors. Maybe you've had that someplace where you've lived before. Well, be thankful that this didn't happen to you. In Los Angeles, residents of one upscale neighborhood are voicing concerns about a home full of OnlyFans content creators. The $6 million home is being leased by Creators Incorporated, which is a company that produces content for OnlyFans, which, if you're not familiar, is an amateur adult internet platform. They have adult movies, well, short movies, adult videos on this amateur adult internet platform. Neighbors have complained about often seeing scantily clad women outside the home. It's one thing if you do this, inside the home. What you do in your home is your own business. But these scantily clad women are prancing about outside the home. They also point out that the home is located near both a church and a school. A neighbor recently filmed a woman in a bikini outside of the front gate interviewing someone with a microphone. We don't want that in our neighborhood. Neighbors say this happens often, adding that the house has been used for filming OnlyFans content for at least the past 5 or 6 years. Not helping the property values there, I guess. And then there's this out of Spokane Valley, Washington, Washington State, where a homeowner discovered a moose in his backyard pond. And apparently, the moose got in but couldn't get out. The sides of the pond were so steep that the moose could not step back out. So the moose was stranded in this person's backyard pond. Volunteers from the Humane Evacuation Animal Rescue Team had to be called in and built a ramp down into the pond to allow the moose to get out. Now, that must have been an interesting job to build this ramp while the moose is still there in the pond, because moose generally are unfriendly animals to humans, and they're very large animals, and I would imagine that this moose being trapped in the pond probably was not too happy. So must have been an interesting job building this ramp. At first, the moose was cautious about the ramp, stayed away from it, wasn't really sure, but eventually used the ramp to climb out. The moose was in the pond for about 5 hours before they were able to get him out. It's a homeowner with a story right there. Speaking of animal fun, did you happen to see this? This kind of gone viral. And this is one of those things. I don't care which side of the political aisle you're on. This is funny. An elephant that was brought into the recent Texas Republican convention ended up relieving itself right there on the floor of the convention. The elephant, of course, being the mascot of the GOP. The Texas Republican Party posted a video of the elephant, which is named Paige, by the way, Paige the elephant. The video was posted on social media, although they made no reference to the part where the elephant relieved herself on the floor. The Democratic Party of Texas, meanwhile, called it the perfect metaphor for the Texas Republican Party. Hey, I don't care what side of the political aisle that you're on. That's funny and a bit embarrassing for the Texas Republicans. Let's see. Our dumb criminal of the day comes to us from Canada. And this from the Northwest Territories of Canada, where Royal Canadian Mounted Police responded to a report of an intoxicated individual who had stolen a kayak. Apparently, he thought that would be a good thing to do. The suspect then took the kayak out into a local lake with a snow shovel, which he tried to use as a paddle. A snow shovel. What he found out was that snow shovels don't really make very good paddles. He actually ended up falling into the lake after capsizing the kayak. And we had another one of these stories just a few days ago in the broken news that somebody stole a watercraft and tried to escape authorities on a lake. I mean, where are you going to go? Are you going to spend the rest of your life out there on the lake? It's not like you're on a river or an ocean or something where you can, you know, paddle off to infinity, you know. You're on a lake. So all the authorities really had to do was wait him out. But in this case, he capsized the kayak and then had to be pulled to shore by officers. And that's when he was arrested. Corporal Kevin Kim said in a statement regarding the incident, quote, "Operating any vessel while impaired puts everyone at risk." Especially if you're using a snow shovel to paddle away your stolen kayak. And finally, how about a World Cup story in the broken news? I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is hilarious. World Cup fans in Boston. All right, now, Boston is where Scotland is playing, and they have kind of taken over the city, the fans of Scotland, and they are just having the time of their lives. They're having a huge kind of continuous party in Boston, and World Cup fans in Boston are actually drinking so much beer that bars in the city are running dry. The Scottish supporters emptied bars and liquor stores of several popular brands. So they've emptied the bars and the liquor stores. And Boston's a pretty big town. It's not like, you know, going to, I don't know, the beverage barn. And that'd be one thing. But they are drinking bars and liquor stores dry across the entire city of Boston. Hennessy's Bar in Boston says it tripled its St. Patrick's Day sales before it sold out on Sunday night. Other businesses are ordering more beer and adding staff for upcoming matches. English fans are expected to flock to Boston next week for England's match against Ghana. So they're going to have to stock up. They are drinking, literally drinking the city dry. Now that is a celebration. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You don't think twice about wearing your seatbelt. Going boating? Real boaters wear a life jacket. It's easy to do. Accidents can happen quickly, and if you're not wearing your life jacket, you won't have time to put it on if it's stowed. So pick a comfortable life jacket and wear it. Remember, life jackets are for everyone, regardless of your age or swimming ability. Have fun, make memories, and boat responsibly. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and U.S. Coast Guard.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. As America nears its 250th anniversary here in a couple of weeks, Americans in general seem to be in a sour mood. Pew Research finds that 69% of Americans are dissatisfied with the direction of the country right now, and moreover, only 40% believe our nation's best days are ahead. It's kind of sad, actually. But here's the contradiction. While only 48% are optimistic for the future, 68% say they are hopeful about the future of the country. Two different things. And the negative sentiment isn't necessarily new. The last time Americans were more satisfied than dissatisfied with the direction of the country was in early 2003, according to Pew's data. But this year, the share of adults saying the year ahead will be better than the previous year has dipped to 50%. Yes, political affiliation heavily influences outlook, but two-thirds of Americans on both sides think that their side is losing on the issues that matter to them, which is kind of interesting. Both sides think that their side is losing. And the part that's the most sad in this survey that I saw, 2/3 believe that America will be more politically divided in the next 25 years. More politically divided in the next 25 years. I'm not sure that's possible. But that's what 2/3 of Americans believe. And younger Americans under the age of 30 show more pessimism than do older adults. We've really got to do something. We've got to turn that around. You would hope that it would be the other way around, that younger people would be more optimistic, but not currently. Now, it was kind of interesting as I was perusing the data on this survey. I happened to mention it to a friend of mine who pointed, he's a little older than me, and pointed out that, you know, when we celebrated our bicentennial 25 year or 50 years ago in 1976, the country wasn't in that great of a mood at that time either. I mean, remember what was going on in 1970s. I was a little young. I mean, I remember the bicentennial in 1976, but I was only just almost 9 years old at the time. So, you know, I was very young and couldn't appreciate all of the nuances of that. But remember what was going on in 1976. I mean, we were just out of Vietnam. We were just past Watergate. You know, the energy crisis of the 1970s, you know, inflation, we're in the middle of a recession. I mean, things weren't great during the bicentennial year of 1976 either. So the idea that we are not necessarily in a great place economically for the semi-quincentennial, you know, let's not let that dampen the celebration, I guess, is the message here. And let's always remember that our best days have always been ahead, and really no reason to think that they won't be now as well, despite our knee-jerk reactions on this. Well, how is your summer reading list coming along? If you need a little inspiration, or maybe on the other end of things, maybe you've already gone through all of your initial, you know, list of titles and you're looking for something that is, you know, looking for what's next. Well, either way, Amazon's Best Books of the Year so far is a curated list of can't-miss reads across every genre, and we are joined this morning by Amazon senior editor Lindsay Powers. First of all, Lindsay, how does the editorial team determine what books make this list? Kind of take us through the process a little bit here.
Yeah, for sure, Chris. Could not be more excited to be here talking about Amazon's Best Books of the Year so far. So our team is this small group of book lovers and book experts. We read thousands of books a year across multiple genres, mystery to history, romance, sci-fi, nonfiction, and fiction, to pick the very best ones. We know your time is valuable. Life is too short to read bad books. And so we pick our best books of the month, and then we get in a room, and we, you know, honestly, we duke it out over what we think the best books of the year so far are. You know, we're book people, but we take our job really seriously, and we want to make sure you have something incredible to read.
So what makes this list, or what sets this list apart from, you know, other summer reading lists?
Well, Amazon's list is super accessible in the sense that none of these books are going to feel like homework. They are gripping reads, the kind of books that you're like, you know what, I'm just going to clear my day because I can literally not put this book down. There's also something for everyone, too. I think that's really important, right? Like our top 20 best books of the list, or best books of the year so far, are across all genres. But then you can go on Amazon.com/best books so far, and you can get all of our category lists. So this is, you know, great if you're like, well, I want to read a history book, or looking for a romanticy to give to a friend, or you're just looking to surprise yourself.
So in other words, if you have an idea of the type of read that you're looking for, you've got folks covered, or maybe people who have no idea what they're in the mood for, you've got that covered as well. And I'm also kind of curious, because I always think it's interesting to see how the sausage is made here. For you, when you look at, you know, compiling your list, your personal list, are you more of a hidden gem type person looking for that sort of needle in a haystack, or are you more apt to gravitate toward the titles that are getting a lot of attention, the viral hype, that kind of thing?
I like all books.
Well, let me
say just one. But I will say I love a hidden gem, and I also love the big viral one, right? So, like, number two on our list is London Falling by Patrick Radden Keith. He is one of the most talented narrative nonfiction writers alive. So, like, you knew this was going to be a big book. But, you know, and it lived up to my expectations. It's this incredible tale of power and corruption and crime and bad guys and good guys. But it's also a family story. It's two parents who are racing against the clock to figure out why their 19-year-old son has disappeared. And so that's one that you could literally hand to any type of reader. But then if you're talking about a viral hit, I would lean to number three on our list, which is Yesteryear by Carol Claire Burke. This is like a literal viral story in the sense that it's about an Instagram influencer named Natalie. She has 8 million followers. She is a quote unquote trad wife, but her life is not as it appears on Instagram. And this is, you know, a book that you will read through so quickly. It's kind of a genre mixer. It's there's a twist at the end that you will be calling your book club, or it'll inspire you to start a book club if you don't have one yet, because you'll be dying to talk about it.
Okay, so since we're into that, that's kind of what I was getting at. I mean, there are so many things out there. You almost have to wonder: do some of the titles live up to all of the hype? And you know how to separate those that you know really do measure up. So you mentioned a couple that are on the list. What are some of the other hot can't put down page turners on the list for 2026 so far?
Our number four best book of the year so far is called Strangers, A Memoir of Marriage by Belle Burden. This is her first book. It started as a viral newspaper article, and then she expanded it into this entire book. And this is one of those incredible memoirs. It's intimate. It's vulnerable. She seems also to have this very perfect life on paper. She is the daughter of this very influential New York City family. It's the early bewildering days of COVID, but her family is out on their gorgeous Martha's Vineyard house. Everything seems to be going great with two of her three children, her husband of 20 years who just walks in the room one day and says, you know what? Don't want to be married anymore. You can have the house. You can have the kids. Gets on a plane and leaves. It's shocking. Readers watch her literally pick herself up off the floor, put her life back together. You are rooting for her the entire time as she finds her voice and she finds her joy, which is, you know, what we need more of in this world. Let's all find our joy. Number five on the list is Night Objects by Eli Raphael. She is also a debut author. It's her first book. Another one where you're like, wow, you really hit it out of the park here.
Okay.
It is an atmospheric suspense story for fans of God of the Woods. It is about a young woman, a teenager actually, who is reeling from personal tragedy when she is sent away to a boarding school where secrets are swirling and danger is looming. It's also this really beautiful mother-daughter story that kind of flows in the background and throughout this entire narrative. It's atmospheric. It will whisk you away to rural Washington. Just another one that's a super gripping story.
Now, if folks have been paying attention, we mentioned the number two, the number three, the number four, number five books on the list. We skipped number one. I'm assuming that's intentional. We want folks to head to the Amazon list and find out what's at the top of the list and what all of those other titles are. What are some of the biggest trends that you are seeing right now? You as you look at the entire list, kind of overarching, but do you see some kind of trends developing?
Yeah. So a one big trend right now is that people are wanting stories that kind of can fit in multiple genres. And I will, spoiler alert, tell you number one is Kin by Tayari Jones, because it is the perfect example of this trend, right? This is a historical fiction, but it's also an incredible family story. It's about Annie and Niecy, two best friends who have known each other since they literally shared a cradle as babies. They are reeling, both of them, from the loss of their mother for different reasons. And so this becomes an incredible meditation on the families we're born into, the families that we create. I will tell you, I read it while on an airplane that was being rerouted over Canada because of tornadoes in the Midwest. I didn't notice a thing. We were bumping all over the sky. I was so enthralled with this book. I was grateful for the extra time with it. When I finished it, I hugged it to my chest and said, "More, please."
That's high praise when, you know, you can be on a diverted plane and have all that extra time sitting on an airplane and still not mind. That is high praise for a book right there, let me tell you. Again, Amazon senior editor Lindsay Powers is with us talking about Amazon's best books of the year so far list. And where do folks find all of the titles? And again, as you mentioned, you can break it down by genre and all of that. Where do we find it all?
Amazon.com/best book so far is literally just an incredible roundup of books for all different kinds of readers, whether you're looking for a particular genre or you want to be surprised and delighted with a curated list of what to read next.
Lindsay Powers, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. Coming up tomorrow on the program for Father's Day, what does it really mean to be a good dad in today's world? A heartfelt conversation with the author of Fragments of a Decent Man. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.